Susan O'Keefe has become our effective Sunday Business Post Brexit correspondent this week, and she's reporting live from London, where she has seen Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, survive a vote of no confidence, but also seen her Brexit deal voted down by a staggering amount of votes, including some of those from her own party. Susan joins me now live as the week comes to an end. Susan, what is the atmosphere like over there? Could you sum it up for us?
Well, it's been quite an extraordinary time, really. I mean, both outside the Houses of Commons and in the House itself, there's a kind of febrile atmosphere. Everybody's on edge. Everybody's rushing. Nobody can stop to talk to you. Everybody's queuing to get in. Everybody's queuing to get out. And there's been a sense all week of history being made. And in fact, several people whom I would have said would have been there for a long time, people working in the House itself, were all saying, oh, you know, this is a historic moment where, you know, we're on the edge of our seat. So there was no denying that it was a big spectacle and a big piece of history. And there was a lot of turmoil around it. You could definitely sense that in the air.
And there's a lot of different predictions about where we go from here. We've people obviously saying a second referendum is most likely. The general election has been mentioned. And also this intriguing idea that she'll come back yet again with another version of the Brexit package that she's put together. From the people you've been talking to, which one of those kind of predictions is getting the most smart money at this stage?
Well, I suppose watching the statements being made before the vote happened at all, and obviously there were days and days of actual debate in the House, both the last time in December and this time. And just taking a little while to listen to MPs standing up and giving their views, both on behalf of their constituents and, if you like, on behalf of themselves and their deeply held views, you know, you could come to the conclusion that there's such a range of choice and such a spread of confusion around the place that no deal, no conclusion could ever be drawn. People feel very strongly that Brexit meant Brexit, as in leave, go and go now. Other people felt Brexit meant, well, less Europe and less Europe now. And others didn't want Brexit at all. And that meant, well, actually, let's not go, let's stay. So when you have every single variation of a theme, and you have a prime minister who is quite dogged and quite determined in her approach and is one of those people who, it does appear now from all that has been said and witnessed, that she really does keep her cards close to her chest, is not the best at reaching out and collaborating. And in a way, if you're a leader, you can't lead nobody. You know, a leader means having people follow you, having people around you, having people to agree with you. And she seems to have failed. She took on the responsibility, right enough. That does make her a leader in one way. But she certainly didn't bring the troops with her. So it's no surprise now that there is this sense of disarray and confusion, because all of those MPs now believe they too have a chance again to shape the new Brexit deal. And they're taking every opportunity that they can to express those views, whether it's out on the green where you see all the cameras and the journalists, whether you see them doing little recordings inside the House of Commons, whether they're in little huddles, whether they're having tea, you know, whether they're meeting in their own secret places in the dark of night. They all believe now that it's up for grabs again. And that is largely down to the fact that Theresa May led, but nobody followed. And there is a vacuum yet again, in a way. However, this time, the clock is ticking. Of course, it's been ticking all along, but it seems to be ticking louder and harder now.
It seems, sorry to interrupt you, it seems significant, and do you think it is significant that Jeremy Corbyn said, I'm only going to meet the Prime Minister if the idea of a no deal is taken off the table right from the start and ruled out definitively? That would seem to be a high bar for the Prime Minister to jump over.
It is a high bar, and you see Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the SNP, is also joining in and saying, look, this is just not going to work. She has to come some of the way. She has to start giving. She cannot keep demanding and she cannot keep insisting. And of course, what they're trying to do is break down the Theresa May that has brought us to this point, that has led everybody into this kind of circus arena now where confusion reigns. There shouldn't be this much confusion when you think about it logically. because certain things ought to have been ruled out by now. They should have been examined. They should have been put under the microscope. But they were all left out there in the ether. So now that we're in, if you like, the last hurrah stage of this, yes, they are obliged, as they sit currently, to leave the EU on the 29th of March, unless they ask for an extension of Article 50, and so that would give them time, or unless they were to remove Article 50 altogether, which would mean they would just go back to staying in the EU. For what it's worth, I don't believe they're ever going to do that. I think it's gone too far now to say, oh, let's go back to June 20th, 2016, and stay in the EU. So I don't think that's an option. So they are facing the idea of either coming up with some tweaked version of a deal or no deal. So she has to face now either reshaping a deal, and everybody thinks they can play a part in that, or they keep trying to reshape something and they end up with no deal. And that's really, for me, what it boils down to. And which of those hands that are playing a part in reshaping get to be the strongest, the loudest, and the most efficient? And will she let them in? And will they be able to work together? That's really where she's at.
Yeah, and what's very frustrating is for our audience, a Sunday Business Post audience, who have to make decisions, financial decisions. If they're small firms, they have to say, do we need to get in Brexit readiness mode? And that costs money. If it's not happening, we then don't have to make that investment. But what you're saying and the uncertainty you're outlining is that, you know, they just don't know. And if it's extended, if Article 50 is extended by another year, that decision is still in the hands of companies all over Ireland and all over the UK as well, whether is this ever going to happen or not? Should I spend 100, 200, 300,000 on getting Brexit ready, or should I just take my chances, take a risk that this will never happen? And everything that's happened this week from where you're standing doesn't really answer that question for those people.
No, absolutely. From where I'm standing, and actually I really feel for people. I mean, it was all right for the Secretary of State for Health to become the largest owner of fridges in the world when he started buying them up to stockpile medicines. It's okay for a state to take, if you like, a risk and buy fridges. But it's not okay if you have 6 or 7 or 9 employees and you're thinking, will I plough my extra savings or make a big loan from the bank and try to buy up either, you know, either ingredients to make something or stockpile or whatever the decisions are really, really difficult now. And it is abundantly clear, one thing, is that they are not putting the country first. That's absolutely true, because if they were, a negotiation of some kind, not only would it have not started by now, but it actually would have taken place months ago, a proper cross-party collaboration. But this is always about politics. This is always about power. And there's one thing as certain as that, is that the division between Labour and the Conservatives is huge. I mean, it always was, but the division with which the Tories hold the Labour Party is very strong. And we saw that yesterday evening when they voted to support a Prime Minister that many of them don't like and don't trust and don't believe in and don't think she's doing a good job. But my God, anything is better than Jeremy Corbyn. And of course, I wrote about him in the paper last week and basically said he is not fit at this point in time to have a general election because he doesn't have anything to offer either. So if you hold power, you're going to keep it. So they are still playing politics. They are not putting the good of the country and then the good of Ireland, if you like, after that. They don't care about that at all.
Yes, and what's clear to me, sure, what's clear to me based on coverage this morning from the financial markets in London, HSBC and others saying Brexit is never going to happen at all because they think it'll either just be extended interminably, so you just have Article 50 extensions one after another, so it kind of renders the whole thing academic in that sense, or, you know, it will be abandoned in some form. Now, I don't know, you know, as you said earlier, I'm not so sure about that, but it does seem there's a big gap between what the financial world is saying, and they have real money on the line, and what the political world is saying, where you are, who seem to be of the view that this is going to happen in some form in the next few months.
Yes. I mean, originally when Brexit was first voted, I remember thinking I ought myself to have gone to the bookies and put money on it never happening. And I always felt that it would never happen. It just felt like they had gone too far themselves. But now they've gone so far into it and so much has been pledged and so much seems at stake, certainly from a political standpoint, who's standing in the House of Commons, that those who don't want Brexit, or who actually still believe, contrary to all the evidence that's there, they still believe that the UK would be fine and would survive and would be OK, in fact, would do rather well, thank you very much, outside with no deal, you know, there's still a lot of those people there. And they're the ones with the power to make a decision. Ultimately, the ordinary people on the street who've been outside clamouring and waving flags, holding up banners and chatting to people and handing out leaflets, their influence is very, very, very tiny. It's minuscule.
Finally, one question to ask you, as you've sampled the atmosphere, on the hard Brexit side, the people who say we can leave, we can use the WTO regime to set up a new trading relationship with the outside world from now on, among that particular group, did you get a sense when you spoke to them that they truly believe Brexit is still going to happen? Or did you think there was a little bit of fraying at the edges among that particular group?
I thought that they now felt they had a new opportunity to try to shape something. They're absolutely determined that they are right, that there can be, there should be no customs union, that they can shape it with WTO. The backstop is such an irrelevant and such a stupid thing that, look, just get rid of it and there's no problem and nobody's got to say a word about it if we just get rid of it. So there's a sense aspects of it, but also their sense of strength that, look, there is an opportunity here for us. We are edging closer to a no deal. And actually, we'd be quite happy with that, because in the beginning, that's what we thought we were doing. Brexit meant Brexit, get out now. That's what they'd like.
OK, Susan O'Keefe, live with us here on the Sunday Business Post, live from Westminster. Thanks for all your writing over the recent weeks about Brexit. And you'll be an interesting person to check in with on Sunday to hear further of your dispatches from Westminster. Thank you very much, Susan O'Keefe.